Yes, welcome back to Matt Chats, episode 2, season 2, and boy, isn't it a big guest today, the man we have on. He played 2 one-day internationals for Australia, 3 T20 internationals for Hong Kong in the T20 World Cup of 2016, 98 shield matches, 6,009 runs. He's also the inventor of the ramp shot or the scoop, Ryan Campbell. How are you, mate?
Good, thanks. How are you?
I am very well, mate. Now, let's jump into it. Obviously, the whole COVID situation going on at the moment. Tell us about it. How's it going over there in the Netherlands? Obviously, we have our stuff going on in Australia, but what's happening over there in the Netherlands?
Mate, you guys have no idea what COVID is yet. You know, we've been living with it in Europe for probably the last 17 months, basically.
Wow.
You know, it's only really, we've only come out of lockdown probably in the last month when, you know, for the months previous, it was all about, you know, masks everywhere. A lot of the places were closed. Cafes and restaurants were only allowed, you know, small amounts. But I guess in the back end of the summer, we've seen our cases, you know, we are now down to 2,000 a day here in the Netherlands, and
wow.
That's a really good thing.
Yeah,
so that's
right.
How, you know, when you guys talk about, you know, obviously I have family and stuff in Perth, and, you know, you've been locked down maybe a week here and there, so I kind of say to my mum and dad, guys, you have no idea what COVID's all about. And unfortunately, you know, it was always going to get to Australia at some point, and it was going to get, and we're seeing in New South Wales, and the spread is, you know, is pretty rampant. And, you know, again, without being too political, I just hope that everyone understands they just need to get a vaccination. And, you know, that's probably the reason why here in Europe, we're kind of getting back on our feet, because the vaccination programs have been so, you know, good and rolled out so well that we're up to that 80 or 90% of, you know, people in the country. And, you know, like I say, we still have a lot of cases, but the hospitals are able to handle it, and there's not so many people going to ICU because of their vaccination.
Yep. So in terms of you're obviously coaching the Netherlands over there, how hard has it been trying to get the team training and up and about? Obviously, there's a T20 World Cup coming up. Has it been really tough?
Yeah, that's been the tough side of things. I think when we went to Nepal in April, they were the first games we had played in 560 days or something. You know,
wow.
We won the World Cup qualifiers in November 2019, and the team hadn't played or hadn't been together since April 2021. That's how tough it's been. You know, we've seen at the start of this pandemic, you know, the big countries like England and Australia be able to play because of their bio zones, but you know, the facts are those were costing tens of millions of dollars, and they could do that because their broadcast rights were worth about $1 billion, so they were getting their cash back, so to speak. But, you know, for associate countries and smaller countries, mate, the facts were we just can't play. It's been impossible. So, you know, even now, you know, my team will not have played a T20 match since April, going to the World Cup. We've only played one. You know, our Super League series against Ireland was the first time we played full international, you know, ODI cricket for, I think it was something like 2.5 years. So, yeah, mate, we've been up against it. So, again, without being political, sorry if I don't sound too unenthusiastic or sympathetic to, you know, players and stuff around the world who are moaning and groaning about bio bubbles and fatigue and stuff. It's just, most of our cricketers would die to have those sort of issues, but, you know, at the moment it's not to be.
Yeah, totally understand. Now, going to go a bit back in time. Obviously, you kicked off your career back in WA. How did you get into cricket from the start?
Well, mate, I don't think I had a choice, to be honest. I was the youngest of four kids, and, you know, my memories, my earliest childhood memories, was I was either kicking a footy with my brothers and sister in the backyard, or I was playing cricket. And, you know, that's just the way everyone was brought up. And, you know, in summer, I joined my local team, Balcatta, and you know, in the winter I'd play footy for my school and stuff like that. So, yeah, I didn't really have a choice. And I loved the game. I loved, you know, I loved cricket. I loved footy. I loved being in a team. And I guess from there, you know, the skills sort of came through and the journey began, so to speak. But, yeah, my greatest memories is just playing cricket, you know, on holidays or in the backyard till the sun was gone, basically. And then we'd try and set up the light system in the backyard so we could play night cricket as well. So, yeah, like I say, mate, I love the game. I've always followed it. I've always watched it. You know, when I was a kid, it was Rod Marsh and Dennis Lee. That's all you, whoever you wanted to be, they're the two that you always wanted to be. And, you know, Viv Richards was the other one. So, you know, it is a great game and I love it dearly.
Now, obviously, you ended up going on to play Shield cricket for WA. Do you remember your debut?
I do. I actually debuted, I know Adam Gilchrist was away with the Australia A team, and I think we played Tasmania. So I filled in, and I actually remember, I know this is a bit awkward to say, but I remember having a conversation with Wayne Clark in the showers after that game. And I kind of said to him, well, you know, Gilly's back, so obviously that's the end of my year, and I'll just sort of play club cricket and stuff. And he said, no, mate, we back you. You just got to go to club cricket. You've got to make runs. Keep making runs because we're going to look at you as a batsman. And, you know, as it turned out, I ended up, you know, being into the side as a batter. And I guess I played my first probably 5 years as Michael Hussey's opening partner and partner in crime, so to speak, in what was a pretty reasonable WA cricket team.
Now, Wayne Clark, was he a big influence for you over your years in state cricket?
Massive. You know, in my whole, I think, 12-year career, I only had two coaches for WA, and that was Wayne for most of it. And then I think there was 2 years when Mike Valletta took over for a little while. But, you know, Wayne, I think people forget that Wayne took over a WA cricket team that was was coming off the back of some great players who were at the end and didn't want to go, pretty much. And I guess their focus was also about playing for Australia. And, you know, it was a great time for WA cricket, but it had just sort of petered off. And, you know, Wayne took over and made it very clear that it wasn't about playing for Australia. It was all about playing for WA. And you know, he put Tom Moody as captain. He took over from Damien Martin. He then got the influence of some of the youngsters, which, you know, in his time we saw, you know, Michael Hussey come through, and then it was Simon Kadich and myself and Rob Baker and these sort of guys. And we assembled another great West Australian team. And, you know, when I walked out the bat and I looked up on the board and I saw myself and Michael Hussey, then it was Langer, Martin, Moody, Kadich, Gilchrist, Julian behind me. You'd think, gee, let's get on with it here so we can get the real batters in.
Now, your Shield career did come to an end. Was that your own decision? Because obviously you went on to play a bit of cricket with Hong Kong down the line a bit later.
Yeah, 100%. I always played the game because I loved it, and it wasn't supposed to be a job. And to be honest, I ended up being so busy in my last couple of years with media. I was the host of Postcards WA, I was working radio, I'd been asked to, you know, starting to in with Fox and things like that. And I couldn't find the time to put in the dedication into one or the other. And I just felt that, you know, WA were in a time when I think Luke Ronke was coming through and we were looking after him and he needed more opportunities. And I just said to Wayne, I woke up one morning and just said, mate, I'm done. It was almost like I was over the fight of what you had to be a first-class elite sportsman. And, you know, I think I made 100 two games before I retired. So it was halfway through the year and, you know, I was very at peace, to be honest, with finishing my career. And I actually thought that cricket was over for me at that point because media was going to be, you know, really taking, you know, number one role. And that it did. You know, I think I was working for Nova with Nathan and Matt for years, and then like I say, postcards WA, and I was doing cricket, and I basically got dragged back into cricket with Damien Martin. He rang me out of the blue and asked me, would I consider coming to the ICL, which was actually the one before the IPL, and I didn't want. I said, no, mate, don't be stupid. I'm too busy. I haven't played for, you know, 2 years or 3 years or something. And he got me at a vulnerable moment when I was at about 20 beers under my belt on the Friday night. And he basically said, name your price. And I just said a ridiculous number and didn't think. And then he rang me back in 20 minutes saying, yep, it's all agreed. Start playing and start practicing. So that kind of got me back into it. And from there, the coaching came about as well. And off I went to Hong Kong.
Yeah, right. Now, you're at Hong Kong as sort of helping with coaching. How did it end up that you end up playing and then finally getting to play in a World Cup?
Well, I went up there as the head coach of the Kowloon Cricket Club, which is one of the great cricket clubs from around the world. It's a magnificent, you know, place, and I think it's valued as the most expensive cricket ground in the world up there with Singapore and the Hong Kong Cricket Club. But, you know, I was looking after their program, but I was also the assistant coach to the national team. The head coach at the time was a Perth boy called Charlie Burke, who had done great things for Hong Kong cricket. And, you know, he got me as his assistant, and I was looking after the batters. But part of my job with the Kowloon Cricket Club, it also meant I had to play a little bit. And, you know, I kept playing, and, you know, my numbers were pretty good in Hong Kong cricket. And I guess after I qualified, you know, the World Cup was upon us, and a couple of the Hong Kong guys had been done for match fixing or match, you know, not revealing an approach and had been suspended by the ICC. And one of those was an opening batsman. And Hong Kong, the one thing we didn't have was experienced players. And, you know, it was a young squad, and I was looking after them. And, you know, Charlie, again, kept asking. And to be honest, I didn't want to. I thought, as at my age, it would bring unfair and unwanted media attention to associate cricket, where I reckon there's a bit of a stigma about, oh, it's just the old ex-players, that, you know, expats playing in another country. And I didn't really want that for Hong Kong cricket. But, you know, in the end of the day, Charlie convinced me that I needed to help. And so I went as the batting coach, really. And then, you know, I had to play, and I ended up, I think I was opening the batting and opened the bowling for somehow in a few games. But, look, at the time, I didn't really want to be there. But, look, I look back on it now with a bit of a smile on my face, and I'm no doubt when my kids grow up and be a bit older, I can explain to them how Daddy opened the batting and opened the bowling at a World Cup one day.
Yeah, that's certainly going to be a good story to tell. Now, obviously for us here in Australia, we don't get to see a lot of Hong Kong cricket and Netherlands cricket and stuff until these World Cups come around. What's the sort of talent differences like between the two countries? Like, are there players in Hong Kong and Netherlands that you think could potentially be good enough to come over and play in things like the Big Bash, etc.?
Mate, the facts are, and now I am going to be political,
yeah.
The facts are that the naivety of Australia, the big countries, Australia, England, and, you know, probably New Zealand as well, about how good associate cricket is just ridiculous, in all honesty. You know, people think that, oh, yeah, these associates, they play once in a while. Mate, we work harder than any other players in the world because, you know what, we have to do it for free because most of our players aren't contracted because the cash isn't there. So, you know, we have contracts, but then, as you see from my team, you know, we produce players that I think I've got six now playing county cricket.
Yeah.
You know, so England obviously are attracted by the Dutch because of, you know, their work visas and stuff are easy to get in. So, you know, the like of Ryan Tendulskar and Colin Ackerman, Roelof Vandermeerwe, you know, they're all well-known players. But, again, if teams looked closer at what goes on, because the competition of associate cricket is always cutthroat, because if we lose a game, we may lose our entire funding. I sort of say, and this is not having a real red hot go at the Renegades or anything, but The Renegades have won 7 games out of 28 over 2 years.
Yeah.
But nothing happens. Mate, they lost the coach, or they may lose a sponsor. Mate, if I won 7 out of 28 games, I would lose my whole funding. There would be no contracted players. I would have no coaches in the country. And the whole of the KMCB would be bankrupt. So that's the level of pressure that our guys are under consistently. And, you know, the Netherlands are the 13th team in the Super League, which no one knows about. And, you know, everyone thinks it's a jolly, these one-day competitions. But, you know, when you have a close look at it, every game of ODI cricket now has significance.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing that ODI cricket has lacked. And, you know, us being a part of it means, yes, we're playing against the Bears and we have to be amazing to compete. But we're also representing all of the other associate countries, because the last thing we want is that now that we've been given this opportunity, if we fail miserably, then, of course, the big teams will go, oh, yeah, see, we told you. You know, it's not competitive enough, despite the fact that there's so many uncompetitive games of ODI cricket.
Yeah.
And we saw that at the last World Cup, which we were promised that there wouldn't be, because they reduced that to, what, 10 teams, or it ended up being 8 teams or something. Yeah, mate, you've seen, you know, Sandeep Lamishani come through. You've seen Rashid Khan. Now, Afghanistan were an associate country only 3 years ago or 4 years ago. So,
yeah.
You know, all these players from Afghanistan, all these players that can be seen, the USA are going to be a force to be reckoned with. There's players from Namibia, Oman, you know, the Netherlands, Scotland. Mate, of course players could play in the Big Bash, but no one wants to go outside their comfort zone. Everyone wants to play safe and just get the same old player. Now,
yeah.
Tim David is a great example. Now, Tim David wasn't even heard of, wasn't even allowed to play for WA. It was when he played for Singapore and did some good things that attracted some attention. And that's where the Hobart Hurricanes saw him do his business and gave him an opportunity. So, mate, there's lots of cases. And again, I am sounding political now because it does get under my skin a little bit. But, and I'll be the first to admit, I was the same. I didn't know about associate cricket until I got my teeth sunk into it. Oh, and I was probably like you. I would see Ireland play at a World Cup every now and again, and if they did well, it was like, yeah, good on you. Well, you beaut. But now, I'm all about it. I love it. And I think what you'll see when we go to this World Cup, I think what you're going to see is Scotland, Papua New Guinea, Namibia, ourselves are going to be highly competitive. And if Bangladesh and Sri Lanka don't play well in that first round, mate, you might see some very big upsets on the cards.
Let's hope so. So, obviously, doing that work with the Netherlands and Hong Kong, do you find that very rewarding, that when you do get a good group together and guys that are really committed to the cause and then have some great wins, that it's almost more rewarding than being at those bigger nations?
Again, I've only coached in the associate world now, so
yeah.
I'm not sure. You know, obviously winning a World Cup or Australia winning the Ashes would be amazing to be a part of. But I mean, the facts are, you do, after putting in all the hard yards and you see what your coaches go through and you see what your players go through, for when they get that success, I think it's one of the great things in world sport. And, you know, I've been lucky enough to be a part of the Dutch setup now that won that World Cricket League, that the players knew that that would get them into the Super League, which has changed Dutch cricket. You know, we've had our first series against Ireland, for instance. It was the first time in the history of Dutch cricket that we were live on TV into the Netherlands.
Yeah.
And that is a massive deal. And, you know, that means kids can see it. And that means, you know, they can ask mums and dads, well, what's this game about? I want a part of that. I want to see that. It's a big deal. And like I say, hopefully we can go to the World Cup. We can do well, get through to that next round, because, again, that guarantees us a spot in the next World Cup, so we don't have to go through the qualifiers again. You know, because I would love to bring this group to Australia, and that was the disappointing thing about COVID, not having the World Cup in 2020 in Australia, because, mate, I've got a fast bowling brigade that I'd love to let unleash in Australia on the fast bouncing wickets. And I guess when you ask me about Dutch cricket and what's the difference between us and the rest of the associates, it is our fast bowlers, because, mate, we got plenty of them, and they bowl fast, and they're hostile, and they don't like batters, and it's really fun to watch.
Now, obviously, we know that that World Cup is coming up. Do you feel like with that fast bowling brigade, you know, obviously you said if you get through, you're straight through to the next World Cup, which is exciting as well. Do you feel like you have the side that could do a bit of damage, get through there and cause a couple upsets?
I do. I honestly, I will say this with a proviso. We will be probably under the most pressure of all of the teams going because of our lack of cricket.
Yeah.
You know, we are in a pool of death when we start because, you know, Ireland are obviously a full nation and going really nicely. Obviously, Sri Lanka have had horrible, probably 6 to 8 months, but I can see that Mickey Arthur's playing a lot more youngsters and, you know, their T20 game, I think, revolves a bit more around a carefree, no-fear sort of style. So they're obviously going to be tough. And then Namibia. Mate, they just announced that David Visa will be playing for them, who's a really good franchise T20 player. Plus, they've already got a host of players, and they've all been playing a lot of cricket. So, look, we'll be up against it. But like I say, when the Dutch get together, one of the things that I love about them is that they never take a backward step. Mate, we'll be grinding, and if we do get into that next round, I have no doubt that we can upset a few people. And you know, my goal is to be playing against Australia, because that is a thing that I would love for my mum and dad back at home watching me on the sidelines trying to upset the big boys.
No, I love it. Now, turning attention to a few your personal cricket accolades, I just want to know, during your career, was there a toughest bowler you faced?
100%. There was a guy called Adam Dale, who obviously played for Australia, but opened the bowling for Queensland. Mate, we played at a time when Adam was just this guy that, you know, just seamed it around and swung it around. And, of course, the Gabba and the Wacker were pretty much juiced up in those times to make sure that there was going to be a result either way. And I think Adam particularly, but a part of that, you know, there was Casper, which there was Bickle, there was Joey Dawes, there was a heap of them lining up to take on me and Huff. So I think all opening batters struggled against them, but especially, you know, Michael and myself. And again, that was a time when we played a lot of day-night shield games with these orange balls that looked like meteors, and that didn't help it too much either. But yeah, I still have some waking up in cold sweat thinking of Adam Dale.
Now, obviously, you did a bit of keeping. You played your couple of one days for Australia. Did you get to do a bit of keeping to Shane Warne, and how tough was it to pick what he was doing?
Yeah, so when I'd play against Shane, and when you are facing him in shield cricket and in one day cricket, we were lucky because the times we played him, it was at the Wacker, so we had. You knew it wasn't going to spin a million miles past the bat and stuff. But, you know, watching at the wiki, I think I knew what he was bowling. And then when I was first picked for Australia, I flew across to Sydney and we trained the next day. And I was lucky to have about an hour with him, just me and him. And he bowled and talked. And the great thing about Shane Warne was he loved to share information. Like, he didn't keep it to himself. He wanted people to know what he was doing, and especially his teammates. So, you know, I was lucky enough to, you know, pick his brain, and he just bowled to me for an hour. And it was, and again, I felt that I could pick the flipper was the easiest thing. I know that people can't believe that, but actually his flipper was the easiest thing to pick. The problem was he would bowl a leg spinner that looked exactly the same. One would spin at 2 centimetres, one would spin 3 feet, and you didn't know the difference. It looked exactly the same, and that was the greatness of the man. And, you know, the other thing that I don't think people give credit to Shane Warne about is he could figure out. He was a cricket nuffy. He literally could figure out a batsman and work out what. And I think in saying that, we've seen it on the Big Bash and things like that early on when he was mic'd up and he would talk people through how he would bowl an over. But, you know, he should have captained Australia a lot. But of course, everyone was at the big office in Melbourne were a bit nervous about Warney and his antics, so they didn't want him to be the captain. But if you ask any of his teammates, I think they all would say that he was a genius tactician and probably should have captained more.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Now, in terms of your wicket-keeping as well, was there the hardest person you had to keep to? Was it Warney or was it someone else?
Again, I didn't keep enough to Warney to say, oh, he was really hard. But, yeah. You know, in Australia, we have a couple of bowlers in my time that, and again, in England it happens all the time, but the ball actually swings after it's gone past the batters and it wobbles and does weird things. And we had a couple of blokes like Sean Carey and Joe Angel in WA that did that on certain days, which made keeping an absolute nightmare. And I was lucky I didn't break too many fingers. But, they were the horrible ones. I think, you know, I kept the Brad Hogg for most of his career. And Hoggy, I will say, was a great competitor. But I felt that I knew what he was bowling. And, you know, I guess that's the secret of wicket keepers is, you know, part of our repertoire, so to speak, is knowing your bowling stocks and knowing, you know, your personnel and being able to handle them and knowing what they're doing. So, again, that was pretty lucky for me. Again, Stuart McGill was another one who I kept quite a bit to in the A team and early in my years, you know, when he was in WA. And again, he was a guy that didn't really have a lot of secrets, but the fact that some would spin 3 feet, some would spin 5 feet, and some wouldn't spin, that was the toughest part about a great bowler like himself.
Now, I had a few people message in to ask you about this, the ramp shot. Obviously, you're probably the first one to do it. It gets called the dill scoop, but do you feel like you were the first one?
I feel like I should have got 10% commission from Dill Shan for all the money he made from it. But look, at the end of the day, people can argue what they want. Was I the first? I think Dougie Mariner was another one that may have done something a little bit similar around the time I was about it. But it all came about for me because, again, as the wiki, I had to sit through every fast bowlers meeting in one day cricket, and they all said the same thing. You know, we're going to bowl full. We're going to try and bowl yorkers. We're going to have mid on and mid off back, and we're going to have fine leg up. And me, as a guy who liked to tinker and think about a few things, I just sat there and kept thinking, well, what happens if I could get it on the full and get it over fine leg or over the wiki? I think it could affect the bowler's psyche and then change the field. And I guess that was the theory. And then I did it against, I think it was Ian Harvey, who I went to the academy with. I did it against him in a game against Victoria. And to be honest, I joke around about it a little bit, but I was actually trying to hit Darren Berry in the mouth because he was giving me a bit of verbal. So that was the spur to try it. And it came off. So basically, I then think a week later, I was selected for the A team to play Sri Lanka, and Justin Langer came to me and said, we're going to put you in early. I was actually batting down the list, and he wanted me to go in and up the rate, so to speak. And I figured now was the best time as ever, and I think it was Zoysia was bowling left arm around the wicket, and I knew he was going to bowl full. So I did it a few times, and then it was born, I guess. But what I will say, mate, no imagination of mine did I think that players would take it to the next level. And I see the reverse ramps and the actual courage that blokes like McCullum were doing it against Sean Tate and Brett Lee at 150 clicks. I take my hat off to them and think, wow, you know, it is fantastic. And, you know, now I can't get players to play cover drives. They all just want to play ramps and reverse ramps and scoops and stuff. They play 360 degrees. But, you know, hopefully they learn the basics first. And that's what I tell all mums and dads. Get your kids to play the basics first before they start ramping.
Yeah, for sure. Now, I had a few questions sent in, so we'll go through a couple then to finish off. Stephen Kemp sent in. He wants to know about your time at the Joondalup Cricket Club.
Loved my time at Joondalup. I was I started my, you know, when I was in, I lived in Kalgoorlie, and when I was a kid, like I said, I played for Balcatta, and their feeder club was North Perth. So once I became in the, I think it was the under-14s, I had to move to North Perth, which was good because that was where my school, I went to Arrowmore, so I was just around the corner. So I played all my juniors for North Perth. But then I moved to Kalgoorlie once I finished school and for opportunity. My sister was there and I was going to work in the gold mine. And playing cricket and footy up there, you just could almost write your own ticket. So I went up there and I played and worked. And then I did pretty well at a country week final. And there was a guy by the name of Ray Robinson who was sitting in the stands. And he came and signed myself and Tim Brooks to Bayswater Morley. And I'll say that, you know, still to this day, I still see myself as a Bayswater Morley boy. I love my time there. And eventually I did decide, though, that I needed a bit of a new challenge. And I was asked by Joondalup, would I come and captain and sort of steer the ship? They had never, you know, since leaving North Perth and moving to Joondalup, they hadn't had much success. And I felt that was kind of my full circle to finish where I started, so yeah, to speak. So I really enjoyed my time there. I think we won out the first one-day title that Joondalup ever won in a day-night match at the Wacker. And, you know, I think they became a force to be reckoned with, you know, my times there. You know, again, we had a lot of numbers because we have two teams in every junior grade because of how many kids we had up there. But I guess it was trying to get them into an elite program and making sure the first team was good. I'm very proud to say that I picked Josh Inglis as a 15-year-old in the semi-final of the first team, and I guess I'm hoping that set him on his path. Him and Jaron Morgan were the two that under-15 guys that I picked. So, look, I love my time at Joondalup, and I think they've done pretty well. And like I say, I look back at all my club time in Perth and think, you know, again, it's a wonderful time of your life when you're playing for a good club with all your volunteers and helping out and guys just playing because they love it. And hopefully you have some success.
Awesome. Now, Colby Shocker wanted to know, who would you say is the quickest bowler you faced over your career?
Yeah, that's very easy to answer. I had a number of ding-dong battles with Brett Lee, who was just, you know, frighteningly fast. I say to everyone, when people ask me about fast bowling, there's a level of fast bowling where around the 140, 145 mark that you go, you know what, this is pretty quick. And then there's the rest who are below that, you just go, okay. But then there's the exceptions. And those exceptions, when it comes out, you go, oh God, this is going to be game on here. And Brett Lee was definitely one of those who was just stunningly fast, and I feared for tail enders because he was nasty to them as well. But I guess the one that really stands out is Shoaib Akhtar. You know, I faced him, I think, at the festival match in the Swan Valley at Midland Guildford, where they didn't have side screen. So he was running, pushing off the marquees and bowling. And again, his action was a lot different from Brett's. You couldn't really see the ball till right at the end, and that was horrible. I'll admit that was horrible. And anyone who says they love facing extreme fast bowling, I promise you they're lying.
Another one here from Peter Haller, and he wants to know the biggest thing you were taught that changed your cricket game for the better.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I think when it came to batting, I actually changed my grip a little bit. When I was playing for WA, I had a wonderful batting mentor in Noddy Holder who looked after a lot of the Scarborough guys and the WA boys. And I know he's still going well over there at Revolution Sports. He runs a great program. He really changed me because, he let me be free and to back my skills, but we also tinkered with my technique, and no one had really spoken to me about my technique. I actually didn't realise that I held the bat differently to most people. It was, in fact, it was more of an Asian grip where my bottom hand was a little bit around, and that kind of had my hands working against each other, and it was Noddy who picked that up. And, you know, we sat there and we worked about the pros and cons, and, like, again, we worked it out, and he was big on your grip, but he was big on your backlift. And, you know, things that I'll say to the kids now, and one of the things, that the first things I look at when I'm working with any batsman is their backlift, because, you know, if they're not picking their bat up, then it makes it very hard to hit the ball hard, and it makes it very hard to hit it consistently. So, you know, there's a couple of little things that we can look there in batting that we can control, because we know once the bowler bowls the ball, we have no control and we just react. So there's a few things. But again, Noddy's pointers about my grip and my back lift were really important.
All right, we've got two more here to finish off. One from Jack Scanlon. He wants to get a bit of an insight of what cricketer Baba Hyatt is like as a cricketer from Hong Kong.
Baba Hyatt, yes. Well, Baba was a very good player. Well, he is a very good player. He was one of the ones that came through, you know, in my time at in Hong Kong. Jack Scanlon, I know, his old man, was actually the guy that employed me up in Hong Kong. Yeah, he was a brutal batsman. He can, you know, again, he was another one that I think you saw in the Canadian or the T20 Global League in Canada, yeah, that he burst onto the scene, because, you know, he was just a really, really good, aggressive player. Again, should have had a better back lift. I tried to get him to pick the bat up a bit more, which would have been nice. But, again, he's another associate cricketer that you could throw in and say, look, he could have been anything if he was born in a different country.
Yeah. And now the final one. This is a bit of a strange one here from Peter Haller. And again, he wants to know, what's your favourite meal or food to eat when celebrating a big win?
Well, this is the Hong Kong part of me comes out. There's nothing better than to find a good Chinese restaurant that has dumplings, hargao, which is the prawn dumplings and stuff. Yeah, I love that sort of thing. But hard to get here in the Netherlands, I'll tell you that. It's a bit tougher to find. So that's the one of the big things I miss about Hong Kong. I miss my friends, obviously, but just the food and the atmosphere, and going to Happy Valley Racecourse on a Wednesday night and having a few beers, watching the horses, and then going and having some hargao and stuff. Yeah, they're the good times that I'll remember.
Now, Ryan, it's been absolutely awesome having you on. Really appreciate it, mate. Good luck at the World Cup for the Netherlands, and hopefully you can go deep in the tournament.
No worries, mate. Thank you very much for your time. And, yeah, like I say, for all those out there, let's be barracking for the orange, because it's always good to follow an underdog story.
Yeah, I like it. Thank you, mate. Really appreciate it. Pop stars, do a leap with the baby. I had to lace my shoes.